In our weekly study of this very special scripture, we have come to the fourth chapter. In the earlier chapters, we saw that the teacher, the Lord Himself, He is showing the disciple Arjuna the goal and the way. Arjuna is very much like us, and therefore the advice to Arjuna becomes applicable to all of us. Like they see that a medicine which is good for certain conditions, you find out by testing that this works for malaria, then everybody affected with malaria is given that medicine. So, when our condition is compared with that of this disciple Arjuna, then we find that it is psychologically similar, in the sense that we also are having lot of conflicts as to what to do, what not to do, which path to take. We also have our various attachments in the world, our bondages. We are caught between, like Arjuna was, between the sense of duty and the sense of our attachment to our kith and kin. So, Arjuna was on the one hand wanted to do what is righteous, on the other hand had the various drags generated through the attachment and was confused like we often become. And Arjuna was shown that, well, one has to feel that spark of knowledge, spark of divinity in us, that this physical appearance of ours is a changing, illusory, temporary something that has come over us. That is not our true nature. Lord has diagnosed Arjuna's condition very well, and that diagnosis was is applicable to all of us, that the suffering that we undergo in this world is because of our attachment to I and mine. And whatever we consider as mine, my house, my parents, my wife, my husband, my children, my community, my so and so, we get trapped into this cocoon of my, like that silkworm weaves a cocoon and gets trapped into it. So we also weave this kind of my, all my. And this my becomes the source of our bondage and suffering. And then why does this my come? The source of this I and my is the ignorance, that we feel this I as this body is real, and so this world around me is also real. This ignorance automatically gives rise to the cravings for the world, and then mine goes on getting stuck to us. It is very difficult, almost impossible, to find a real connection between what we call as mine. Like my house. We give somebody some money and then say that this is my house. Now, how does it become my? There is no connection at all. Those cockroaches staying in the house, they also say that it is my house. It is. There is no way you can say that, no, it is not theirs. It is the... So that holds with everything that we possess. Even with the body, let alone other things, my body. How much control do we have on it? Almost nothing. So it is really not worth calling that also mine. It is wrong to say that anything is mine. But we are so much accustomed, so much attached to this completely false idea of mine that we get bound by it, and thus this ignorance therefore has been shown as the cause of bondage. And that also, when you have the right diagnosis, then the medicine suggests itself. What is the medicine? If ignorance is the disease, knowledge is the medicine. Know that you are the all-pervading one continuous existence. Know this truth and then you are liberated. Then you go beyond all pains and sufferings. It is a knowledge that is not just intellectual, it has to become our practical experience to make it efficacious. If it is just intellectual information, then it doesn't become effective in our life. So, in addition to get the intellectual understanding, we need to put it into practice, we need to make it our experience. So that path also was shown to Arjuna. That path is called yoga. How to do this yoga was told. And in the fourth chapter, Lord Krishna is telling the divine source of this knowledge. This knowledge is an infallible knowledge because it is not sourced in some human being. This is not logically spun out by some human beings, like the knowledge of the physical science. Without taking away anything from the great achievements of the physical science, one has to understand that it is empirical. It is therefore subject to lot of errors. As the time progresses, we know that many things which were thought to be right by the science are then condemned to be wrong. And this is natural for the science to happen. If you study the history of any science, you will know. In the science, say, of medicine. With medicine, it is of course very funny. It is every day the things go on changing. What a few years back the people thought to be the perfect right thing, and the research paper comes out after a few days, and then it is said that no, that was not right. This is something is right. Then again, those funding organizations are there, they again fund some new research. Then that new research tells that this is not right, this something else is right. So it is that is the nature of this. One scientist has very beautifully described, a great physicist of last century, his name was James Jean. He was a physicist, and he has shown that what we physicists or generally the scientists do, he gave a beautiful analogy that we measure the shadows only. And as the sun, you know, from say east goes on rising and sets into the west, the length of the shadow, say of a tree, you are measuring the shadow of the tree, the length keeps on changing all the time. So, you measure with great instruments and all that, come to the conclusion that the length is 7 feet and 3 inches. After a while, when the shadows start lengthening, the afternoon, the sun is about to set, and the shadows become long, and then the scientists come and say, oh, those scientists of the old age, they didn't have right instruments, they erred in this thing. The shadow is really 12 feet plus some inches. So, that is the, he says, that is the nature of our physical science. Our understanding goes on changing, our instruments go on changing. Therefore, it all becomes changeable something. The reason is that it is sourced in our imperfect mind, our imperfect brain. Lord tells Arjuna that the knowledge that I have given is not like that. That knowledge is not sourced in human brains. That knowledge is sourced in the divine, the unchanging, imperishable, and where there is no shadow of ignorance. From there, this has come up. And so, therefore, there is no chance of error in this. And then he describes that, well, you see a human being expressing this. But it is, a human being is there just a vehicle. Like this microphone and this sound system is just carrying what I am saying to you. It is not the source of it. It is just a carrier. So, this divine being becomes this human incarnation of God becomes a carrier of that message. And the central feature of that is that this sound system shouldn't create its own sounds, its own message. Sometimes it happens, if there is malfunctioning of it, then I may be saying something, but in between people hear, crack, oh, ha! So that is not, it is the aberration generated through the sound system. It is the, so, therefore, the divine being through which this message comes to us, that is perfectly egoless, does not make any of its sound, any sound of its own. If you read the life of Sri Ramakrishna, one such incarnation of God, then you will see that there is absolutely no trace of ego, no sense of I and mind there. And therefore that becomes a perfect vehicle for communication of this knowledge. So Lord says there, look, you know, we have to pinchingly understand the gap between this incarnation of God and our own lives, our own physical existence. We have to understand the similarity as well as difference. That is how we, through comparison, get the knowledge. We see the difference and the similarities. So, there is this human being like appearance. An appearance which matches a human being. Many actions look just like human being. Everything looks very familiar, like us. Seemingly, this being also has parents like we all have. This being also seems to grow from childhood to youth to old age and passes away like we all do. There is also the human relations to this person like we all have. So that person also eats, drinks like us, and also falls sick like us. Sometimes he is healthy, sometimes he is not healthy. So there are all similarities, and yet there is a very remarkable difference, and that difference is that assuming of the body is not forced, not out of any ignorance, it is a willingly taken up human form. Like somebody acting as Julius Caesar in a stage show. Even while acting, that person is aware that he is not Julius Caesar. He is some John Smith, but has taken up the role of Julius Caesar. It is done with willingness. It is done with a purpose. There is no such thing that one has to do it. It is, and so, although in this, on the stage, the actions are similar to what the Julius Caesar might have historically done, yet, at least as Shakespeare has written in the play, yet the person is all the time fully aware that he is not Julius Caesar. So, here is this special feature, that this person is on the stage with all of us, but knows that he is on the stage, has taken up this role. He is not bound by these actions here. Like in the script, it is written that you hit somebody, and it is the person hits somebody, but knows that he is not actually going to be prosecuted for that, because this is just a show. He will be prosecuted only maybe in the show, but not really. And so, therefore, even if there is a murder, so the murderer knows that he may be hanged because for this murder only in the show, not really. So he is not really perturbed there. Shows although all those emotions on the stage, yet he is fully aware that he is not going to be actually punished for this action. In fact, he is not doing any murder. He is aware of that. It is said that in one show, it was in a village, they arranged those street shows of Ramayana. And there is a scene there that this monkey servant of Rama, Hanumana, gives a blow on the chin of Ravana, and it was such a strong blow that Ravana falls unconscious. Now it was to be hit, mock hitting, you know, but this the monkey fellow, he gave a real blow, and this Ravana was to fall unconscious, but he became so angry that instead of falling unconscious, he pounced there on that monkey, and the monkey started running, came in the audience. So, it is, then it is not a play. This is, then the play gets all spoiled if they forget their assumed identity while in the play. While in the play, even if that fellow got a real nasty hit, he would have fallen unconscious, not showing any anger or such emotions. But afterwards he would have shown that fellow, you know, that, hey, you really hit me instead of hitting really just only a mock blow. So divine human appearance is like that, is amongst us, but is fully aware that this is just an assumed a human garb. See the difference. That see, we are identified with this form, and therefore Lori doesn't feel that it is only a form. She is identified, feels real pain and pleasure, doesn't think that it is just a play. It has nothing real about it. We do not play to think that it is play. It is, we feel that what I am getting through my business is really what I am getting. It is not considered as play, and therefore when we get a huge profit in the business, we feel elated. Wow, I made great money today. And if I don't get profit, in fact, if I run in loss, then I feel morose or didn't do well. The actor will show all those emotions, but inside he knows that there is no profit and there is no loss. It is only a show. So the Lord performs all these actions to show us. So this is the ninth verse of the fourth chapter. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvatah tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mameti surjuna. He who thus knows truly my divine birth and work is no more born after death. He attains to me, O Arjuna. So, we have to understand this special feature of the birth of the Lord. The birth, therefore, if you study the life history of all these incarnations, it is not through the contacts of male and female. It is a completely non-genetic birth. It is because it is taken up through volition, just as when you have to do the play, in the part you are taking up this Julius Caesar's role, you do not really have to go through all those things that Julius Caesar went. It is similarly, this person assumes human body. It is, you may ask, how is it possible to have birth without a sexual contact? An asexual birth, how is it possible? It is, why it is impossible, first of all you have to tell why it is impossible. We take for granted something that is written in the books of science as sacrosanct. It is about the books, what is written in the scriptures, we want proof. How it is proved, where is the proof for that? I don't believe a word of it. But if something is said by Newton or Einstein, and we just agree, accept that as gospel truth, nothing can change in it. It is, they have their limitations, that those things are applicable in certain domain and not beyond it. So it is that why such a birth is not possible. Ask yourself that question, that who made that law that the birth cannot take place without this. You have one procedure of having birth, and now they have so many different ways, you know, of having already the physical science has shown the biological this thing, birth can take place without any sexual contact. The clone that was made, the first clone, that sheep, that dolly, it was generated by a cell that was not from any sex organ. It was an asexual cell used for creating the body. So it is not at all required. But we make assumptions, and then Because that happens in thousands of cases, millions of cases, we see, think that it has to happen in this case also. But you see this, if you study the life story of all these great incarnations, you will see that in all such cases, the birth is of this type, a very special birth. And even in the case of Sri Ramakrishna, through so many records it has been shown that the birth was not a birth through the sex contact. So, even at that level the birth is different than the birth of ordinary beings. So, the birth is not out of compulsion. We are born because there were so many cravings in us, and those cravings automatically required a body to fulfill them, so we had to take up the body. There was no choice for us. The body also was specific according to those cravings and according to what means we had to fulfill them. So that determined an ordinary human birth. In case of God, it is all completely different. There are no past impressions or cravings at all. So that did not force the birth. It is therefore out of free volition. And the actions also are different. God's actions are for teachings, as it is seen that, as Jesus mentions, that it is, I am the goal, I am the way. That the goal is seen in that life, way is also seen in that life. So to show us the goal and the way is this, all the actions have that purpose alone. So, the actions are performed not for getting something for us. See, our actions are propelled. The main propelling force behind our actions is our desire. The desire makes us act. I want to eat this thing. I like this particular curry. I want to eat it. Immediately that creates dynamism. It dynamizes a person. A person might be just sleeping, but you get a desire, and then that desire dynamizes you, and you start then doing something to fulfill that desire. So our actions are born out of those desires, and also therefore those actions, then they bear their own results. We have to pay the bill too, you know. When we do the actions to get certain things, the bill follows, you know, that you did this, now you have to take up this result. And again, they leave an impression. And that is how the habits get formed. See, our actions, we feel that I did this, I had the desire to eat ice cream, and then I went to Ben and Jerry or whatever, and then I had my ice cream. Now what has happened? I've thought that it is all gone now. I had the desire, I went, had my ice cream. No, it is not that simple. That has left an impression on you. Again, an impression is like a seed. After a while, that just as the seed sprouts, this seed creates the desire to do it again. So again a desire to eat more, because it is now the desire is this. One plant doesn't leave back only one seed. Many seeds are left, you know. So it becomes a more intense desire. So I again have to do it. Again and again I have to do it. If I don't do it, then I feel terribly, more and more uneasy. That is how one gets addicted and bound in various ways in the world. So this is the nature of actions performed in ignorance, and therefore through different cravings that we have, we do these actions, get bound by them and get addicted to them. So in case of Lord, it is not there at all. There is basically no craving. And why no craving? Because there is perfection. Craving or desire comes only when there is imperfection. You want something and you don't have that. It is the desire or craving is possible only there. You must need it. That means you are not perfect. Also, you don't have it. Then only you seek it. You need it and you don't have it. That is the source of this desire. So desire means you are imperfect. So in Lord, because of perfection, there is no desire, no bondage, and no impressions or habits get formed due to these actions done. It is, we get any action we do, we start form that habit. One lady comes here and she has a way of pronouncing certain words. So we started, just to tease her, we start talking like that. Instead of coming, she said coming. So we also, just to tease her, started saying like that, that I am coming. And then she said, well, later on what has happened is she dropped that. But we kept on, and then other times also, I started unconsciously saying, I am coming. So it is, that is how the habit gets formed, such things get picked up very quickly and the habit gets formed. So our actions are like that. The actions of Lord are, they don't form any impression. There is no ego, there is no desire. So there is this pinching gap, gap between the Lord's birth and Lord's action, and our birth and our action needs to be felt. Now, about birth you cannot change anything, but about actions you can change. Your actions can be made divine too, like the actions of the Lord. Instead of doing those actions through the desires, just reverse the trend. Let us learn to do it as duty. So, when we do the actions like that, the scenario changes. Then, gradually we get freed from these binding forces on our life. It is apparently a slow process, but it is certainly a process. Slow or fast depends how much efforts we put into it. So, when the actions are done, following the Lord's instructions, then our connections become different. We still are, as the example I had given some time back, that we still are doing the same work, but the result now internally becomes different. It is like, using the same car going in the wrong direction. Instead of that, we are using the same car, but going now in the right direction. We don't have to change the vehicle. The vehicle is fine. Only you were driving it in the wrong direction. Now you understood that it was a wrong direction that was taking you to bondage and suffering. Who want bondage and suffering? And if we ask ourselves this question, that do we want bondage and suffering? Do you want Vishwanath? No, bondage and suffering? No. So when you know that your vehicle is going towards bondage and suffering, you start seeing the boards actually, that yes, bondage and suffering 20 miles away. Then you go further, bondage and suffering 19 miles away. So what do you conclude? That you are going in the wrong direction. Bondage and suffering was 20 miles away, you saw. Now you saw 19 miles away. Then you know that you are going in the wrong direction. Let me take an exit. Turn around the car. And then vehicle is required. You don't say that this car is hopeless. It is taking me. The car is fine. What you need to do? Go in the right direction. That is following the advice of the Lord. Following this principle of karma yoga. And you work, same work, you know, whatever work you are doing, somebody is student doing their work for studying and all that, same work is done. And somebody is an engineer doing the same work, very good, do that work. You don't have to change your job and take up a priestly job. And it is not that you have to become a priest or a minister or a monk, no. Do your work. Only the direction. Work is the vehicle. So use that very vehicle. But the direction needs to be changed. And when that changes, we will see, instead of now, you will start seeing that bliss and peace. Instead of 20 miles, bliss and peace, you see bliss and peace 19 miles, 18 miles. So, go on in that direction. That is what is told. It is simple, friends, just changing the direction. Spiritual life is not difficult. It is much more simpler than the life that is devoted to the worldly enjoyments. The life devoted to worldly enjoyments is very difficult life, friends. I don't know why most people have faced those difficulties. They understand them. Worldly enjoyments, they are firstly in short supply. And a lot of people are running after it. So there is always a competition. You don't get them without competition. Even to get into job, you need, there is competition. These days, of course, it is much worse. It is, so there is a lot of competition there. Moreover, if you at all end up getting it, it goes out very quickly. It doesn't stay with you. Those enjoyments, they do not stay with you. You say the enjoyment of eating ice cream, you ran, you got, and then suppose you ate. What happens? The ice cream, you feel nice when the ice cream goes, maybe from your lips down to the throat. Afterwards, it is all, whether it was ice cream or pizza or what, the taste doesn't seem different than afterwards. So, the enjoyment just goes. After that, it is gone. It doesn't stay with you. Not only that, further, the trouble is, while going, it gives you a kick. The pain, you know, the pain of separation, they're gone, finished, you know. It is, that becomes, that is, then you suffer for it. You get the joy of uniting with a friend. And then comes the parting of the ways. It has to come. Whatever gets joined has to get separated also. This is obvious, that has to happen. There is no choice in that matter. It has to happen today or tomorrow, everything that comes together has to fall apart too. There is no possibility of that being joined all the time. It is foolish to expect that. We foolishly expect that, and thus what happens? When the parting comes, pain, you know, how much pain. I told sometimes back that advice of Lord Buddha to his disciple Ananda. That he says, Ananda, do you know? Tell me what is bigger, the waters of the seven seas is more, or the tears that people have shed because of the separation from their dear ones is more? Says, Ananda, I tell you verily that the water of the tears is more than that. We experience, all of us experience that wherever there is a bringing of two things together, the seed of separation is already there. We have to understand these things. It is that you cannot have it, just as you cannot, they say that you cannot have the cake and eat it too. If you have the cake, then you feel you are united with the cake. But the cake cannot be, it is not meant for keeping in hand and looking at it. So now you eat the cake, feel that you are getting united with the cake, and what has happened? Gone now. It is, the separation takes place there now. The cake is in the shop and you are here. So it is, the separation takes place there again, that propels you into the similar actions. So that is the nature of the worldly pursuits. Well, it's so difficult, first of all, to get. Even if you get, it doesn't stay with you. And good that it doesn't stay, it becomes painful. You know that if it stays, it becomes painful. The worldly relations are also like that. If that nearness is too much, it becomes painful. The distance is too much, that also becomes painful. It is all, because it is all basically all pain. So, that is that. And then you have to keep on maintaining all that for a long, long time with great efforts. It is a psychological torture, a feeling of failure, because it doesn't take you anywhere. When we look at our life, whatever it is, that 20 year, 30 year, 40 year, 50, 60, 70, what did I achieve in my life? What did I get? Maybe I got $1 million. What? I cannot take it with me. It is gone. What did I achieve in my life? We try to count the achievements. Maybe I got a master's in some this thing. What difference does it make? I got master's in this subject and that subject. And now so many universities, they give those things. It is said in our, this is a university area, so many schools are around. So if you just throw a stone, usually it falls on the head of some master, you say. So it is, or a PhD. It is, what did I achieve? You just ask, you see, what did I achieve in life? And you feel that sense of vacancy. It's a big problem. The psychologists speak of that problem, that many people feel depressed because they don't see a purpose for this life. What am I living for? It is like that movie, many other movies also, or the books also have pointed out this problem. of being lost in the world for the lack of a purpose. That Groundhog Day was a movie, that the same thing being done repeatedly every day. For what? It is caught, we are caught in that cycle, in that rut. No way appears to be to get out of it. This the same thing we do every day and don't see what is the purpose of doing it. And as human beings, as that beings endowed with intelligence, it hurts us that there should be something more to my life than just this. And getting up every morning, brushing my teeth, and then always grumbling about getting late to the work, and somehow sipping the coffee, running about, saying hi and bye to the friends on the way, and like that. And somehow, like that, I keep on running, and gets tired by the end of the day. Sleep, and next day again, the same rigmarole, it is begins all over again, loss of purpose. This is the nature of the worldly life. How simple compared to that is the life devoted to the spiritual pursuit. It is very simple, friends, that you don't have to do anything special there. Only the direction is to be changed, that your life is now devoted to feeling, realizing that God alone is real. So this is, when you do that, what happens? The next line of this beautiful verse tells that, Tyaktva deham punarjanma na eti. When one imbibes this underlying consciousness, then when the time comes to give up this body again, now you know already that you are connected to God. You don't have to then take the birth in this or some other type of body again to fulfill the desires. You don't need to do that. You are connected to God. You are connected to perfection. You merge with the divine. So it is said there that no more born after death, he attains the Lord. So that is the journey is fulfilled. Why you do not need another body then? You do not need the vehicle when you are at your permanent destination. Then you are there, you have reached, the journey is finished. So the vehicle of the body is redundant now. You don't need it anymore. You have attained the supreme goal of our life, and thus there is no further need of body. And then in the next verse, which I will just read, we will not discuss it today, that Lord again tells Arjuna that many have really achieved this in their life. Many people who vitaraga bhaya krodha manmaya mamupashritaha bahavo jnana tapasa puta madbhavamagataha. Free from attachment, fear and anger, with their minds intent on me, purified by knowledge and penance, many have attained my being. So many have attained this in the life. It is not something that is impossible for us. In fact, that is the easiest and most possible thing that we can achieve in life as an achievement. As an achievement, this is the easiest achievement, to get united with the divine. Other things are anyway no achievements, so why call them that we have achieved this? It is like if I tell you that I will give you that lorry if I give you 10 fake notes, $100 each, would you like them? She says, no, the fake notes, 10, I don't want 10 fake notes. If I give you 100, would you like them? Says, no, no, all trash. 10 or 100 or millions, it is not something that is an achievement. So in the world, whatever we achieve are all these fake notes, fake currency notes. They are not worth achieving at all. So, here is the real achievement that we can get in one's life by just turning the vehicle in the right direction. So, any questions? Yes, Jamuna Bai. The ego is the most important requirement for forming the impression. I do it. That I am the doer of it, that idea creates the impression. Then the memory is associated with it automatically. When this I is there, there is the whole instrument of what is called the mind, intellect, memory and ego. This fourfold functions, they keep on happening there. So when this idea, I am the doer, is there, the impression gets formed. When I am not the doer, the impression doesn't get formed. Sri Ramakrishna used to give that idea that if those days where that photography used to be different, you need to put that silver nitrate or something coated glass there and then get the photo. If the coating of that silver nitrate is on the glass, then when somebody gets exposed to it, then the impression is stuck there. If that coating is not there, if it is only ordinary glass, then so many things can come before it, no impression gets formed. So this is the difference. This coating is this ego. I am so, and I am the doer of this action. When that is not there, Lord doesn't have that, and so there is no impression formed there. So let us conclude with the closing prayers.